This episode is sponsored by Kiprun and their brand new super shoe, the KD900X LD, which Shoe Geek Me got to go out to their campus in Lille to test.
Yeah, so explain what you did over in Lille and how much faster were you in the shoes?
So I tested it against a regular shoe, non-carbon plated, and their previous version of the super shoe, the KD900X. This one's 10% lighter, has a brand new foam and feels much more responsive. And I was over 8% more economical compared to a non-plated shoe, which is mind-blowing.
Absolutely phenomenal, because every little helps in a marathon, but it's not just little old you that's tested the shoe, is it?
No, thankfully it's not just me. They've been tested by some of the best athletes in the world. So Maline Roland, the French record holder in the women's marathon, set her record in these shoes earlier in 2024, running 2:24, which is pretty fast.
Incredible. And they are available now. So if you want to go check them out, head to decathlon.com. They're also available in Decathlon stores worldwide. This episode is sponsored by us. We've hijacked it again.
Yes, we love doing this. We've teased this for a couple of months. Unbearably, we've had a few emails about it, but we can now tell you all about it. We've teamed up with Sports Tours International to give you the chance to come and run with us at the Malaga Marathon and Half Marathon on the 15th of December this
year. Yes, last year you ran your first ever marathon and only a few of us got to witness the pain of that in real life. But this year, you can come and run the marathon, the half, and we're going to try and get Rick signed up to the half marathon too.
That's going to be the hardest job here. There are limited spots, but we have sorted it out with Sports Tours International. So they'll handle all of the tricky bits, the logistics and the bookings and so on. And you get 3 nights in a 4-star hotel, which is really exciting. But they'll look after you. They're the experts at doing this, which is why we've teamed up with them. So basically, if you'd like to come and get a little bit of winter sun, training for a marathon that time of year, I really liked. And this is very close to Valencia, so I'm essentially guaranteeing the weather.
Yeah, I'm not sure we can quite do that. But if you want a shakeout run, an excellent race, an after party and a live podcast recording, then grab your spot now. Head to the link in the show notes to find out more. Or go to trc.social/Malaga. This is the Running Channel podcast with me, Sarah Hartley, our resident Olympian, Andy Baddeley. And this week we have swapped out Rick for our ultra running trail enthusiast, James. And we're going to be chatting all about how James is going to be taking on 100 miles for the first time this year and how it's okay to abort your plans or races if things aren't going 100% to plan. Welcome, James.
Thank you very much. I am Rick's awful stand-in for today.
Oh, I'd say you're better than Rick already.
Yeah, I agree. I think we should dive straight in. I said drive the first time we tried to record this podcast, so we've done it all again.
Beep, beep.
So Andy's just been told by our producer, Tom, that he's not allowed to breathe for the entirety of this podcast.
Yeah, apparently I was breathing too well.
Are you a nose breather or a mouth breather?
I've been told I'm a nose breather just now by the...
There he goes.
I don't know. I don't think about it. I just breathe. I just do it. Just get involved, Sarah.
Great, I've stopped caring. James, how are you? How's your running been this week?
I'm good. I'm now really, really aware of my own breathing. My running this week has been the most varied running I've ever done in my entire life. So I was in North Wales for most of the week on holiday, so lots of trail running, and then immediately got on a train, went to Night of the 10,000s, did a track workout, and then I went and did a lovely 45-minute run around a park in London. So I feel like I've ticked every single box.
Everything. Yeah. Very nice. Which was your favourite run of the week?
Definitely some trail running, although I completely messed myself over. I was meant to do like an hour and 50 run, and I was like, right, I'll go up this big climb. It was a lot bigger than I thought. It was just like maybe 1,000 steps up this mountain. Oh. And so like most of the run was that, and then the rest of it was downhill. And that was all I could do in that hour and 50.
I mean, that's fair. That is hard. Andy, what about you?
I was just mesmerized then by how deep James's voice is. It just seems to be reverberating. So it's very different to having, very different to having Rick. My running's been good. I love the hotter weather. That helps me just roll out the door and actually get out there and get it done. I don't feel like I need to do such a big kind of rigmarole of the same degree of kind of foam rolling and limbering up that I have to do throughout the winter. So I've been getting stuck in and I'm feeling faster. And I even got to do a track session on Saturday. That's my first track session in years and years and years, because we were, and we're going to talk about it later on in the news section, at the incredible Night of the 10,000 meter PB race in Highgate.
Yeah, and speaking of races, it's not very long now until you're going to be trying a 5K race.
Yeah, this is all unraveled for me, I feel.
When you say unraveled, do you mean you chose the challenge, you've spoken to your coach about the challenge, you've chosen a race, you've signed up for the race, and then when we said we wanted to film it, you've gone, oh no.
Yes, that's exactly what I mean by unraveling. Yeah, yeah. I was like, I'm just going to rock up. It's going to be low key. And then it went, in the space of a few hours from that, it went to, you guys are filming, we're going to have a bike on the course possibly, to the point where even just out of nowhere, one of the people I happened to be running the track workout with in Highgate on Saturday was one of the organisers of the race that I'm running down in Bristol. So
I'm feeling the pressure now. I'm gonna call you out there. It wasn't, you know, it wasn't sneaky tactics from us going, oh, you're running 5K, are you? We should come and film it. I think there were multiple occasions where you posted in group chat, said in the office, guys, I'm running a 5K. Does anyone, I'm running a 5K, guys. Does anyone want to come and film this? Hello, big person
just,
over here.
I'm just begging
kind
for
of
friends.
A big deal. Come and film
yeah,
me.
Yeah, no, I don't think that's what happens.
And your 5K is in Bristol, which is really far away, but I am excited.
Yeah, Bath, Bristol, that area.
That area, west.
Yes.
Or left.
Left and slightly down.
Left for Sarah. So yeah, doing some faster stuff. It was weird being on the track. It was freshly laid as well. I don't know whether this is strange or not. You'll say it is, I think. As I came out of the train and was walking up to the track on Saturday, I could smell it.
Confirmed, that is strange.
Yeah, that is weird.
Yeah, I could smell a new track surface. And it's that, I think I've said this before, but that's real nostalgia from everything from the age of probably 11, 12, 13 when I started running on the track. In the summer, it has a particular smell, sun-baked or freshly laid kind of synthetic track. I mean, that doesn't make it sound very environmentally friendly or sustainable, but it is, I don't know, that's what I can really associate with a childhood spent running around in circles. That and the way my brain doesn't work anymore.
Yeah, that was a journey, but thanks.
Oh, right, all right.
Can I talk about my running now?
No, I don't care about your running.
Back to me doing a 5K.
Yeah, yeah, that's what I think. Talk about your running, but you took on something slightly unusual yesterday, didn't you? And I feel like this is going to be something you moan about for the rest of this week.
Yeah, oh yeah, 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 yeah. So I took on a 10 plus mile version of a Tough Mudder.
Yeah. Not immediately beforehand, because I think you started panicking immediately beforehand, but a few days beforehand, what was your opinion of these races?
I was so chill about it.
Yeah, yeah.
I was like, yeah, you know, it's just tough, man. I'm just going to bash it out.
Yeah, easy.
It was so hard.
I've done
hard.
Marathons, I've done ultras in Thailand. How hard can it be?
Well, I think the thing that was making me feel better is that, firstly, the thing I love about it is that it's not a race. Like, you don't get a time. If you want to track it on your watch, you can, but like, they don't time you at all. The whole thing, you have to say a little pledge before you start.
Oh, wow.
And it's literally like, I pledge to help my fellow mudders.
Did you help anyone?
Yeah.
Did you really?
Yeah, no, I actually did. Oh. Yeah, I helped lots of people.
I'm quite surprised. I thought you'd be just Sarah, just for herself. Get in there.
Pushing kids
over. Yeah, yeah, exactly. Standing on top of other people to get over the obstacles.
Oh, I did that too. But you were supposed to. Yeah. So there were like loads of, I think we did maybe 20 obstacles, and that ranged from like wheelbarrow racing all the way up to one which was called Arctic. I'm not going to say the second word because I always say it wrong. It's either anema or
enema. As in the
Arctic enema. You had to pause for an enema.
I kept calling it Arctic enema.
Wow.
And I was like, I'm pretty sure it's not that. But no, that was essentially, there's a big plastic tube. You climb.
I mean, it could still be the Arctic enema.
And then it went.
You climb up a ladder. You're at the top of this big plastic tube and you slide down it into an ice bath.
Oh, right. I've not had an enema.
I don't think that's what it is. So you then slide down into this freezing cold water, and then they have a whole rack of tires. So then you have to submerge yourself and crawl underneath the tires, which was hard. And then there were other ones. My favorite one was, there was like essentially a huge big, was it cuboid, where it's a 3D rectangle?
Yes.
Is that right?
Yeah, that's right.
So there's a huge big cuboid in the middle of like maybe 5 foot.
Have you said the word cuboid since you were at school?
I said it a lot yesterday.
Yeah, okay, yeah.
Let's get
to the cuboid.
Big cuboid submerged in maybe like 5 foot of water. And basically that's where you had to really work as a team, because if you were on the side of it and you had to get over it. So one side was pushing up, you could maybe get four people over.
Yeah.
And then the other side, you were pulling it down to get people to tip over.
And was this with strangers or with people that you know?
With apps. So I did it with three other people who I knew.
Yeah.
And I'd say like, that's a solid team, because there were ones as well where you had to get over a vertical wall that was maybe like 7-8 foot.
Could you have got around some of the obstacles completely on your own? Like if you were so far ahead, because you run between the obstacles, right?
Yeah. Well, I mean, they set you off in groups. Okay. There are some. So there are loads of ones where it was like monkey bars, which is why my arms are in so much pain.
Yeah, and you were just moving your microphone to your face today. You were sort of
grunting. The pain. The one, it was hilarious though. There was loads of different monkey bars ones. I was terrible. Like there was one where you had to suspend yourself along a rope. Couldn't do that one at all. Have zero arm strength.
What happens if you can't do them?
You either fall into water.
Lovely.
Or you just like drop down and you can walk through. Like you don't have to do every single one, and you can avoid some obstacles as well. But there was one where, so we'd done a few ones where there was like bars to hold on to, and you had to go over like monkey bars kind of things. And then we got to one, the hardest one probably, where you were holding on to rungs. Then there was a middle section where I think it got even harder, but I didn't get that far. But I got out of the four of us, one guy, amazing, every single one, he was fine.
Yeah.
I got the furthest out of the rest of the three of us, purely because on that one, if you let go, you dropped down quite far into 5 foot of water. Oh. And I was so scared that I just didn't let go.
So it was pure willpower.
It was pure like, that's worse. My arms are in pain, but I'm going to carry on holding on.
Is this making you want to do it, James?
No, this sounds like genuine fear. Yeah. Everything you're describing.
You like the countryside, though. It's quite you like farms good... and mud and stuff.
Yeah, but I'm terrified of heights and I have the upper body strength of like a wet noodle.
What about electric shocks?
Yeah, also not a fan.
That was one of the worst ones. Is there's quite a few where you're in a small bit of water, but you have to properly like submerge yourself in it and crawl along. And there was one where there were little wires hanging down, and if you hit it, you got an electric shock.
How big are we talking of electric shock?
Well, so it wasn't painful, but it made you react. It was kind of like an out of body experience.
So I think we were talking about this and I had this weird idea that we should on the podcast, James, don't worry, you can step out for this. We'll get Rick back involved. That we should sort of wire ourselves up with some kind of electric shock. I just thought it'd be funny. And I think we maybe do a quiz, and if you get a question wrong, then...
I'm actually good.
I think though, Rick's not here. Yeah. And there's no way he's going to listen back to this because he's going to be so cross that he's not in this episode.
Yeah, apart from the fact that he's editing it.
Nah, he still does. I don't think he says he edits it. I'm pretty sure AI does it. And I think we should get three electric shock collars or like buttons or whatever.
Ours
are turned off. Yeah,
yeah, yeah, nice, yeah, yeah. Nice.
And we just put.
Or Rick's, you do it as like a lie detector.
Then Sarah and I would be fine, and Rick would get buzzed all of the time because he's just making everything up every week. He's like, oh, I've been doing some research. Have you? Have you really?
But his confidence is so impressive that he would think it's the truth, so nothing would show up and he'd be absolutely fine.
Yeah, maybe.
And so you've done Tough Mudder, and you and I have been challenged, haven't we, as well, to do, it's not quite the same.
A high rocks,
which is supposed to be like CrossFit for runners.
Yeah. I was semi-confident about that until I did
this. Yes, this is not... So I was going to say, how much did the running fitness help you with Tough Mudder? Not at all? Or
I mean, we still ran... Like, we ran 17, 18 kilometres total. Okay. So that bit was fine. And it was actually... I'm so excited that we're talking about ultras today because I love the kind of ultra mentality of you run a bit, you stop at an aid station, which were epic, by the way. The food at that aid station... amazing. And then you carry on running, so that was great, but zero upper body strength. So
you had your streak of conditioning and Pilates and stuff that you've been doing more or less every week all year.
Yeah,
1 week off, didn't you, around the marathon?
My core, excellent.
Yeah,
my arms,
okay. Well,
wet
Jess
noodles.
Jess from the running channel is very keen to get a pull-up bar in our new office. So
I'm actually going to the gym today, not to do a gym workout, I'm going swimming, but I'm going to go see if I'm going to like another branch of the gym that I belong to see if they have the pull-up machine.
Okay,
and so then by the end of this year, I want to do one.
Everyone can wait with bated breath for an update next week's podcast, Sarah could do get anywhere near a pull-up.
Yeah, really exciting stuff.
Yeah.
But I thought as well in this episode, I know Rick's not here, but we'll ask him next week. It would be good to cement what people should be excited about for updates for the rest of the year. Because I feel like post-marathon, we've all been all over the place. So for me... Yeah. Whether I can do a pull-up. And then also I'm signed up to do the big half in September. So my next kind of big goal that I'm working towards is a half marathon PB.
Got it.
For you, it's your 5K.
Yeah, and then I've got some plans after that as well. So
what should people anticipate?
Well, all of the distances. Yeah. So 5K.
Confirmed. Andy is doing 100 miles.
100 metres, 200 metres.
Hey, well, they would be more fun,
100
they?
Miles.
But I would definitely hurt.
250 miles?
No, let's shush. we're going to come on to that. 5K, I'm going to step up through the distances as the year goes on. 5K now, 10K. Mm-hmm. Half marathon in the autumn, winter marathon, job done.
Nice.
Then I might just retire again. How many times can you retire? I think
usually just the once.
Yeah, that's what I thought maybe.
You're taking the Elton John approach to running, just be like, it's my final farewell tour and I'm back again.
Yes, yeah, exactly. Just
revival.
Just when all of the old, you know, boy bands from the 90s get back together. That's basically...
That's like your legs trying to work again.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
So getting back together. But speaking of big challenges, let's talk about 100 miles. So
it's a really long way.
It's too far. Why are you doing it?
Yeah.
A lot of people ask me this. A lot of people do the thing like, I wouldn't even drive that far. I think for me, the reason why I want to do it and I want to do it now is that it's the only distance that terrifies me. So 100K did terrify me, not as much. I felt like I could do it because a lot of my friends had done 100Ks or 50 milers and were like, you know, strength of will get you so far. You can definitely do that. But like 100 miles, you talk to anyone, it was like, yeah, you don't. Mental side is like very important, but you need everything else.
You can't fake it, right? You can't just guts your way to 100 miles. And I think that is important. Like you've done some pretty, if you were to list your sort of top five achievements, the hardest things that you've done.
Greatest hits in Elton John's.
Coming in at number five. So Marathon de Saab would probably be one of the biggest for me. Comrades last year.
Did you do an uphill or downhill version of Comrades last year?
I did downhill.
Oh, so I'm not, I'm not diminishing it. It's an incredible
thing. You're still putting it in the top five. Yeah.
But that's, no, I'm joking. Okay. That's 80 something K, is it?
So 89K with a very strict cutoff of 12 hours. And I did it in 11 hours and 51 minutes.
Nailed it.
Nice.
And then my first 50 miler was probably up there with one of my proudest, even though I entered it because it had the longest cutoff of any ultra I could find. Yeah. Didn't realize it was because it was self-nav in the Lake District. And it deliberately starts late in the day, so you have to do it at night.
Rick will shout at us because we're using all sorts of in terminology. Well, you are. Self-nav.
Self-navigated. I mean, there was no, there's no route planning at all.
Can you use your watch?
Yeah, you can use your watch. Yeah. Although I didn't really know how to use my watch back then. So what
See,
I would
now
do
now
is
I
just
can't
keep
tell
someone
the difference
ahead of
between
me.
You and Rick.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think of the other ones.
I think that's enough. I think I give. I wanted to give everyone a flavor of the kind of bonkers stuff that you have already done, but then the fact that you've taken on some of those the biggest races in the world that are a long way. Although Marathon des Sables split over multiple days, right? The 100 miles still scares you?
Utterly terrifies me. It's the only race that I've had nightmares about as well. So again, Marathon Saab in the desert, 40 degree heat. I was so well planned and prepared for it, and it's almost felt like it was 3 years leading up to it. So I never really panicked about it, apart from I did a 2 day race and had to pull out after the first day because the snow was so bad. And I was terrified of like breaking a leg or something like that. And even though I took the decision to not complete it, the mental side of not doing that knocked me on. But that was the only blip through the entire way of training for that race. So I was so confident going up to it, which is very different to this kind of build up to this 100 miler.
So now we are in mid-May, and what 100 miler are you planning on doing now?
So autumn 100. So the trick is in the name of when that will be.
Yeah.
But obviously I was meant to be lining up for Thames Path 100 at the beginning of May, which didn't line up for. Sort of still dealing with the ramifications in my head of that before then pulling myself towards the 100 miler in autumn.
And can you just talk us through the, because that's a hard decision to make, to not line up. So what led up to that decision and how are you feeling now?
So, I mean, the main decision was, so while I was in Kenya, I picked up a small foot infection, but it essentially meant that running kind of any distance in any kind of heat would like make my foot feel very painful. And I did what was meant to be a 30 miler about a week or two after coming back from Kenya, which would have been about a month before the race. And I was like, if I can do this, then I know I can push on and I can still do Thames Path. But I had to basically stop after 10 miles because it was so painful. And that kind of was the start of...
It forces you to reassess.
Exactly, yeah.
And it's hard to do. Like you can see even now you're like, you said it, but actually it's visible that you're squirming almost at the idea of having to not do it. I mean,
yeah,
it's past now, so you can't do it. But
yeah, it was really hard, even like on the day watching my friends complete it or not complete it. A lot of them did struggle with the heat and the mud of the race, but it was still really hard. And I did a knee-jerk reaction and entered a marathon on the day. I didn't do the marathon as well, but I was like, I need something, anything. And then the smart part of my brain kicked in and a few of my friends kicked in as well. Just like, you need to actually process not doing a race. And I think it's so easy for us as Running Channel to sort of show that you've just done London Marathon, an incredible time, and we've all done incredible races in the past, but actually having the ability to kind of go, okay, training's not great, foot isn't great, I should not be doing this, is so important.
And I think for a race that's so big, not to use acronyms, but you've got like DNF, did not finish. You've also got DNS, did not start. Both of those, I think a lot of people look at like did not starts as like, oh, that's not as bad as mentally as if you'd started and you hadn't finished. But there are loads of people as well who maybe couldn't run London Marathon because of an injury, or we've just had Hackney Half this weekend. And there's lots of people, like, even within our office, who are like, no, can't run it this year because of injury. And like that, that's really hard as well, because it's not just, oh, I'm not going anymore, so I can just put it out of my brain. Like you say, you've got friends running it, or like there is going to be a part of you on that date that's, oh, what would this have looked like if it was a bit different?
Yeah, it wasn't very helpful that there was beautiful weather as well. I was like praying for like heavy rain. But yeah, it's so hard. And I've not really done many races where I've made the decision to not race them, because my stubborn brain, I basically got into running because I needed something, and like to help mental health and physical health, and like the ability to just go and do things. I love that feeling of like, I can just do it. Doesn't matter if I'm last. So the first half marathon, I was in like, I think the last 0.5% of that race, and that kind of mentality of like, well, I can still do it. But 100 miler is not something you can just do. And I think I'm the only way I'm going to be able to do it is if I get on that start and know that my brain is also behind me. Yeah. Because that 100 mile mentality of with like a little bit of a foot injury that was healing but still there would have just crept in the dark, when you're just like, your brain doesn't want you to go on, and your body's like, hey, I'm going to like flare up this bit.
Yeah.
Even though it's not that bad, to be like, you need to stop.
Yeah. And for anyone that's listening who has had to pass up on a big race that you've planned, because that could have been London Marathon, loads of people sort of force it because they feel like that's their only chance they're going to get to run it, for example. But depending on the severity of your injury or your problem or your lack of buildup or whatever it might be, and then also the degree of difficulty of the race itself, like a 100 miler is one of the most difficult things that you can do. So it's not just a case of like winging it and then you'll be fine to run another five. You know, if it's a 5K, it is a bit different if you've got like a blister or something. Whereas doing anything for 100 miles is going to put you in a whole world of trouble mentally and physically. Mm. And then you could miss another year or two of running based on not getting that preparation right.
Yeah, I definitely have learned the hard way. I did, weirdly, that Hackney Half is this weekend, but I did Hackney Half a good couple of years ago and was on the start line with a knee niggle. Mm. I was like, oh, it's fine. And then I ended up making this knee injury so much worse that I couldn't properly run for sort of 4 months.
Yeah.
And that, you know, you learn in running, you learn through mistakes, you know, either through your training or through the running or through your race strategy or mentally. I find that I learn the most by not succeeding.
Yeah.
Either through like a training session that's gone badly or a week that's gone badly.
But we're here to help people to, you know, hopefully we've made the mistakes. You know, I'm a lot older than both of you. And I've made lots of mistakes. I've never made the mistake foolish enough to try and run a 100 miler. But like the point is...
Not yet. Give it time.
But the point is I can give advice about the things that I've done based on the fact that quite often I've made those mistakes. So I can say, you know, just don't do this thing because that would be bonkers. And then what happens is this X, Y, and Z is the outcome of that. Mm. And so, but it's really hard to listen to other people, even if they have had more experience. So actually pretty good to have listened to, because it wasn't just your own call, right, was it? There was a few people, like you said, friends and family and so on, weighing in to try and give you that rational, as a runner, we're not very rational a lot of the time, I don't think.
Yeah. Well, and Sarah was like the last, like, you're not gonna be ready?
The nail in the
coffin.
I'm
not doing it then.
Sorry, yeah, I'm proper.
That's exactly what I needed, I think, as well, is that,
Sarah was just like, I'm not wasting any video, any production resource on this.
I'm not going there for a DNF. But it's that thing of like, we take the piss out of each other all the time as a team. Hmm. But actually we all do, I'm going to say this and Rick's going to be like, edit this out. We all do respect each other. So actually having Sarah be like, you're not doing it, is like the perfect thing you need sometimes of like, bomb.
Oh, I'm glad I was that voice in your head. But I do think that's important, because I think no matter what the distance is, whether you're running 100 meters or 100 miles, it's not just you. Like, whether you're an amateur, whether you're an elite, there's a team around you. And especially for 100 miles as well, you're getting into the territory where you are being crewed by people. And like, we're obviously in a unique environment where if we're filming someone go do a race, you've got like crew anyway. So you've got like support crew, film crew, everything. And so like, we want to will you to do the best as well, and don't want to put you in a situation where you're not having fun, or like kind of, I guess, setting you up to fail really. So like, we want to be as buzzing as you are, like for the attempt.
And yeah, you don't want to see me at the end of like mile 50 or 40 at IGO 101. Where, I was crying over my poles. Yeah,
go and watch that video. Go and watch the video of James taking on the IGO.
But that's also like a... Like, you are such an incredibly mentally strong athlete. And I think, like, that's something that we can all see as well. Is like, we can see when you're, like, eyes on the prize, locked in, ready to do something. And when we can kind of see the doubt as well. Mm. And, like, if I compare you talking about the race, like, when your foot was bad compared to how you're talking about the race now, it's, like, night and day. Yeah. So can you talk to us a little bit about, like, preparation now? We've got... May, June, July, August, September, 5 months to go.
Yeah, so it's a good long time. And also you're coming from a really strong base, which is important here. It's not like you're going from no running to trying to run 100 milers, even in 4 or 5 months. That would be tough, possibly impossible. So what are the key things that you need to do between now and the race to give you the confidence?
Yeah, so I think the main thing for me is getting a consistent training block in. I've got a 1.5-year-old kid and obviously this lovely job, so juggling the ability to train for 100 miles is, although people will think 100 miles you'd be running, you know, 60k, 70k, a lot of training plans only have you running kind of up to the 30 mile distance, which is because the time on your feet that you'll actually be doing to go past that distance is a negative knock-on to actually being able to train
the following week.
So I've got a couple of races, although having said that, I'm going to do a 100K race in July as a mental tick for me.
It's a milestone, literally.
Yeah. So I've built a training block to work towards that and include that within it. So I have that in my back pocket. I felt it was really helpful for Marathon de Sable and other big ultras I've done is to have something like that. I've always been quite race orientated because I'm just lazy at heart. So having these additional sort of races sprinkled in through a training block, I find really helpful. And I definitely found it when I was training for a half and then for training for a marathon and ultras, of just having those little things to keep you going. Even if it's just park run, I found that really great of like, I need to get up there early for park run. And actually having that as like this little thing.
Also,
to
it's
off.
Just good to have people. I was saying this to someone recently, like it's just good to have people around you. And I guess like feel the quote unquote, like there is no pressure, but to feel the kind of artificial pressure, I guess, of a race environment. Because I did a couple of races in the lead up to London Marathon, and that really helps with feeling calm on race morning rather than being like, oh my gosh, there's so much to think about, especially with like an ultra.
Yeah, because you have to start at the time the race starts. You can't just procrastinate until the point where you've decided that you're going to go out for a run. How many times a week are you going to be running? And then my last question is then, is there something that scares you about the stuff you've got to do between now and the race?
So 4 times a week with static bike session included, and then I do a lot of walks with my kid.
Four runs a week.
And they will vary from short distance and more intensive speed work. People will often think with 100 miles you don't do speed work, but that is still an important building block of any training block.
Variety,
exactly. And then I do a lot of walking with my kid on my back. So weighted training.
Yes.
So walking is still great training. You do a lot of walking in 100 mile or any kind of ultra. So actually having that time on feet with the weight is quite a handy bit of training. And also
I'm sure in a few years when she grows up and listens back to this, she will love being described as your weight training.
Sorry, May.
okay. And then, anything that you're scared of between now and then?
So this is a weird confession. I'm scared of the dark. So training in the dark to obviously prepare for running more often than not for 100 miles, you'd be running through the entire night. And this race is in October, so there's quite a lot of darkness.
So you're just going to have to run it really quickly then?
Yeah.
I'm going to do it all in the daylight.
Exactly. Just get it done in like 12 hours. That's doable.
Fine.
Yeah. Piece of cake. You're listening to the Running Channel podcast. And next up, we've got some news stories followed by the best bit, your questions.
Don't forget, this episode is sponsored by KipRun and their brand new KD900X LD shoes. Now, fun fact, Andy, do you know what KipRun stands for?
Is this a fun fact?
It is a fun fact. KipRun is a contraction of keep on running.
Oh, I did know that. Mainly because you told me just before we started recording this and you're very, very excited
about
it.
Hey, I love a fun fact, but what are you excited about?
I'm excited about the fact that KipRun have this incredible research and development facility in Lille, which I got to go to. I was in shoe geek heaven. I tested the shoes. They genuinely did feel faster. And then the data did bear that out. I was 8% more economical. So I used 8% less energy to run at a set marathon pace in these shoes compared to regular running shoes.
Yeah, you really do forget how much work work goes into getting a shoe from the design process to being available to buy. And if you want to buy these, head to decathlon.com, or they're also available in Decathlon stores worldwide.
Don't forget, you can come and run with us at the Malaga Half Marathon and Marathon in December this year. We'd love to have you come and join us.
Oh, it's going to be so good. And there are so many of us coming out there, so you might be able to run alongside us as well. I don't know what I'm doing there yet. Do you want a pacing? Let me know.
Yeah, if you want Sarah to pace you to a half or a full marathon, or if you want Rick to get involved.
No. Sarah will not be pacing you to a full marathon. Sarah will be pacing you to a half marathon.
Sign up now and we can make this happen. This is what we need. But you get to have lots of fun with us. 3 nights in Malaga, all sorted out by Sports Tours International. If you want to join us, places are limited. So as quick as you can, head to the link in the show notes or to trc.social/Malaga. The website has all of the details of the costs involved, so you can take a look at the different options. Flights aren't included, but this isn't a money-making exercise for the running channel. It's a chance to take everyone out to Spain for an amazing experience, and the cost is what it costs for the hotel and for Sports Tours to organise it all.
Okay, news. Starting off with somewhere we were all at the weekend. It was the night of the 10,000 PBs, which is essentially a festival of 10,000 meter track running. There were some 800 meter races in there as well. And it was also the Olympic qualifying race trials for 10,000 meters for men and women.
Yeah. And it's we were talking about this loads, but it's impossible to imagine this event existing even for, I mean, In its current incarnation, even 5 or 6 years ago, but certainly when I was running, 2012, often the 10K trial at the Olympic trials for Great Britain would have a handful of people in it at the most. I think one year there was only one woman did it, or certainly like very few. And it was, you know, people even in big meets would often during the 10K, they might go and like grab a sandwich or a beer or something. It was the race that people didn't want to watch because it just wasn't hyped in the right way, and I don't think people had an understanding of it. Whereas now there's an entire day where the only races, yet they've introduced 800s now, but most of the races are 10k, and it's going on from 2 o'clock in the afternoon until nearly 10 o'clock at night. There are people lining the banks around this track, and it just seems to always be sunny in Highgate in North London.
Yeah, it was supposed to rain and it was beautiful.
It was absolutely amazing. But there's entertainment for children. There are beer tents over the track, so the runners are actually running through these beer tents. There's also like the spectators are allowed right into lane three in some places, which is just, it's so different to any other race that, and also, when I was running, people had to go abroad to run fast times. That was the perception anyway. And also Britain weren't that good at running generally, with a few exceptions. So just that's totally turned on its head. So now people come from all over the world to run in this race. Britain have got some of the best athletes in the world that are being really competitive. And we're probably putting on one of the best meets in the world. It's just something that's quite proud to see.
It was great. My favourite moment, aside from the 10,000 metre running, was when a stunt man ran through fire, knives.
He had axes, he was throwing axes as well.
Yeah, and hurdled through it.
It was ridiculous. I've never been to a track meet like that before. Like, I didn't know what to expect. Most people have already been to this event, so they knew what they were coming in for, but genuinely mind-blowing. And anyone who's slightly interested in running would have adored
that. It's really friendly as well. Like, the commentary is also really inclusive. So I feel like in some situations you have to like know what's going on. Whereas there, like, you can see the lap counter, you know how much time they've got left. Everyone knows when it's the last few laps because you're told to like make some noise. It's a great environment. Love it.
Yeah, it's bonkers.
James, you wanted to talk about a junior park runner.
Yeah.
Or a park runner who's 11.
When you think about 250 park runs, you think
it's 5 years worth of park running.
Exactly. So an 11-year-old has done that now. So he did his first park run when he was 4.
Right.
And has now clocked up 250. So my question is, how many park runs is he going to get to when he stops running in his like 90s?
I can't even do the maths, but
well, that's obviously interesting. I mean, is there anything that you guys did when you were? Oh, well, I'm guessing running. You were running when you were 11, weren't you?
Yeah, you start looking at me so disappointed.
Well, that I was like, is there anything? Is there anything that you were doing when you were 11 that you're still doing now? But yours is going to be running.
Yeah, probably.
You haven't clocked up 200 running park runs.
Not having any friends.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just hung on to the both of those since I was 11.
I was about to be like, I haven't hung on to hair though, have
you? Oh, wow. Okay. Well, next up, we've got the best bit, which is your questions. So let's jump straight into that. And who's going to read them? Am I going to have to do it?
Oh, I was going to say, do you want me to read them?
Okay.
Oh, can I read it? Because the first one's quite savage.
Yes.
Okay. Excellent. This first one is from Blakey, who didn't say where they're from, but I'm going to let you off because of your question. I am a normal, sane person. This is them talking, not me. So obviously do sock, sock, shoe, shoe. But at the end of every cross-country race, I find myself doing sock, shoe, as I change out of spikes back into something more comfortable to walk on tarmac again, because the team's area is so mud infested that it's even on top of the ground sheets. I'm willing to bet that Andy will have at least once done sock, shoe at a cross-country event.
I think Blakey might be right, you know.
Oh!
But I think that
psychopath.
Yeah, I think I'm a post-cross country psychopath. Yeah, I think we might have talked about it, that there's sort of maybe not as an excuse, but definitely the people who have said they do sock shoe, it's generally dirt related, whether that's dog hair or something. So they're brushing off the bottom of their foot and keeping both feet protected from the elements. So I think if it's your natural inclination, sat in a perfectly clean environment, you know, on the bottom of your stairs or on your kitchen chair or something, to go sock shoe, then yeah, psychopath. But if you are protecting yourself from the dirt of cross country and the magic of cross country, I talked about smells being nostalgic.
Yeah.
I think being stood in a field.
What, smelling your own feet after cross country?
No, not the feet. I was thinking right, more, fine. You know, deep heat and that right. Kind of like...
muddy grass.
Freshly churned muddy grass and like jam sandwiches and stuff. That's what... So this was that's my winter, and then my summer was freshly baked tartan synthetic athletics track. So
right, Paddington Bear.
This is why I didn't have any friends when I was 11. All right.
I mean, now I'm on the podcast, I can admit I am a part-time psychopath because of trail running. So ultra distances, again, really muddy. I would take the entirety of one foot off and get it into another shoe because you don't want to then put your feet back in mud. Yeah. So part-time
this is where a fur-lined croc really is your friend.
I don't think that's ever anyone's friend.
That's the most middle-class thing I think I've ever heard.
Wow.
I've recently purchased a pair and they're excellent. I put them on yesterday.
Lovely.
Because you don't need a sock.
Well, you can't see your feet on the podcast. You could be wearing anything right now. You've got no idea what she's wearing. Although I have just spotted our body language. So I've got my legs crossed towards you guys because I quite like it. Both of you have got your legs crossed away from me. You couldn't be trying harder to get away from me physically or metaphorically.
Right, before Rick hates us, more question. This is Katie from Lancaster. I recently ran the London Marathon in 2024. It didn't quite go to plan as I got injured at mile 13, but I managed to limp across and finish.
But I managed. See, it's hard. Yeah, Rick makes this look quite hard sometimes.
But it was then we discovered Sarah could not read.
But I managed to limp across the finish line in 7 hours and 16 minutes. Good job. I've signed up for a half marathon in 7 weeks' time. I've been looking for training plans to help with this, but I can't seem to find any that support the half marathon distance after a marathon. Do you have any advice on the distances I should be covering for training during the half?
And she also says it seems to be odd running less miles than she was before. A couple of things. It's only 7 weeks away. Post-London, you said that you were injured, Katie. So I would counsel, it depends on what that injury was. You know, if it was a blister or something and then that's fully healed, then this seems like a pretty sensible plan. But if you've hobbled around a marathon in 7 hours, 16 minutes, having got injured, please just be sensible. Like if things are still hurting, if you've still got a niggle and stuff, just because it's half the distance, taking on a half marathon is still a big physical exertion. So
as James found out in Hackney Half.
Exactly.
Yeah. So look after yourself, be sensible and maybe push that back if not. But if you are back in the game and feeling fully healthy, then 7 weeks is going to be plenty of time because you'd already done all that marathon training.
Yeah.
And I would say that you can still look to cover the half marathon distance in training, because you will have covered at least that distance in your marathon training. So that's not a problem. And actually most people who are trying to run a faster half marathon than they might have previously done would train and run at least a half marathon as their long run, because you can. It's not the same as a marathon. And so I would, 7 weeks, you're not going to have a massive shift in fitness. You're almost looking to hang on to that marathon fitness and maybe just do some slightly quicker stuff. And because it's only 7 weeks, that's why you won't be able to find a sort of standard copy and paste training plan out there. Mm. So my only advice really is that follow the same structure as your marathon plan. But yes, I would say it's normal to be doing less miles than you're trying to do for the marathon, but without knowing how many days a week you're training and things like that. Like I'm probably doing the same miles I was for my marathon training now whilst training for 5K. But I've gone from training 3 times a week for the marathon to 4 times a week for 5K. So then that's kind of evened itself out. I don't have any long runs like I did.
It's probably worth saying as well, like the periodization element of training. Yeah. Like I feel like loads of people want to sign up to loads of amazing races. But yeah. if you look at an elite marathon runner, they're not at marathon fitness all year round. So it is really important as well to go through a training block where you maybe do build up to a marathon, then drop mileage down, drop the distances down, work on speed, and then you can ramp it back up. You don't need to, I know for a lot of people, they're like, great, I've run a marathon, I need to hold on to this. But you can definitely drop it down and train for 5K, 10K, and then build it back up.
Exactly that. I was thinking that in the marathon training, a lot of your stuff is probably 10K pace is the fastest pace that you would touch on. But in the half marathon, you'd drop that back, drop down one more. So do a little bit more stuff at 5K. So the half marathon pace feels easier. So before Rick shouts at us for making this too long, I reckon we should wrap up now. But Sarah, do you have a parting favour to ask?
I do have a parting favour to ask. Should we make Andy do 100 miles?
No.
I just think we should. I think it's character building. I think you'd love it. I think you'd really enjoy the snacks. I think we'd enjoy it.
I could pace him and get my own back for the 10K race.
Yeah.
That's true. I shouted at you a lot in that, didn't I? But I only got to shout at you for, you know, whatever it was, 50 minutes, whereas you get to shout at me for a really long time and 100 miler.
I just think at some point in your life,
no. Well, I'm going to jump in with my own favour, which is please don't ask me to run 100 milers, but please do like and follow this podcast wherever you're watching it. So if you're watching it on YouTube, hit subscribe, come back for the next one. Or if you're listening to it on audio platforms, then hit follow, because we love your questions. And the more we can get into podcast@therunningchannel.com, the better.
We'll see you next time. Bye-bye.
This episode was sponsored by Kiprun and their brand new shoe, the KD900X LD.
Now, we've mentioned that this goes through lots of rigorous testing, and one place that it's also been tested is at 42 House, which is a brand new project from Kiprun where they have incredible athletes out training in Kenya, and our very own Mo and James went out there to visit earlier this year.
Yeah, in E10, where I have trained back in the day when I used to be a professional runner. Have I ever told you that?
Never.
No, I never talk about it. It's an incredible place. It's where so many incredible runners have been shaped in that region. And so it's logical that if you want to make some of the best super shoes in the world and you want them to be worn on some of the best marathon runners in the world, you take it to what a lot of people consider to be the home of running.
Yeah, I love the fact that James, when he brought his KD900 XLD shoes back to the UK, they were covered in that iconic red dust from running on the trails. If you want to check out these shoes, then head to decathlon.com. They're also available in Decathlon stores worldwide.
So we're making Sarah run a marathon in Malaga.
Brilliant. This episode was sponsored by us, which Andy forgot to say.
Yeah.
And apparently I'm running a marathon. I mean, hey, if enough of you want me to do it, I suppose I could.
Or the half marathon. And we need to get something that gets Rick out of bed. We want you to come to Malaga with us. Half marathon or marathon. We've teamed up with Sports Stores International. It's an amazing place to go. The weather will hopefully be really nice. Certainly better than the UK weather in the middle of December. So it's a chance to come and be with the Running Channel and other runners from the Running Channel, which are all lovely people, I can promise that. And then we get to spend a few days together, be looked after by Sports Stores International, run a marathon or a half marathon, and then party and listen to us waffle on the podcast.
I think that'll be the bit that Rick's good at. I think what we're going to struggle with is getting him to put down a glass of Gavi long enough to be able to run a half marathon. But hey, stranger things have happened. So if you want to find out more info, head to the link in the show notes or go to trc.social/Malaga.